ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी.
Chapter 3, verse 29 is what we are.
Prakriter guna sammudhaha sajante guna karmasu. Sajjante guna karmasu Tanakritsna vidho mandan
Krishna
vinna vichalayet Krishna vinna vichalayet Prakritehe guna sammudhaha sajjante guna karmasu tan akritsna vidaha akritsna vidaha right tan akritsna vidaha mandan kritsna vit na vichaliyate
Just to review quickly in English what verse 27 and 28 that's leading into this. Verse 27, it says really, in reality, all of the karmas, all of the actions are being done by the gunas of the prakriti, the sattva, rajas, tamas, the body, mind, sense, organs, all this whole creation is really just a modification of prakriti, the maya, and sattva, rajas, and tamas. So everything, your body, your mind, your sense organs, so that means your thoughts, your moods, your emotions, the buddhi, everything. All the actions you do, your organs of actions, all of the sense objects, all of these are modifications of prakriti. And so your body, mind, sense organs itself, everything that makes the jiva an individual entity, one separate from the other, is a modification of prakriti. Right? So it's part of the creation. So here, in verse 27, he says, all of the karmas are just simply modifications, or they are being done by the prakriti, by the gunas of the prakriti, by the modifications of the prakriti. Really referring to this body, right, which is the doer, and the mind, which is the karta, I am doing this. And he says, Ahankara vimudatma, the individual person, the person who thinks, who is deluded, right, who is vimuda, is deluded because of the ahankara, the I notion. That person thinks, I am the doer. What is deluded by the ahankara? The ahankara is that type of thought. Remember in the buddhi, the mind, there are four types of, in the antikarna, there's four types of thoughts. The buddhi, which is more the intellect. The manas is the fluctuating mind. The chitta is the memory. And the ahankara. The ahankara is a type of thought. And it's the thought which identifies the atma, the self, Brahman, with the prakriti. Prakriti being, it identifies the self with the mind, the self with the intellect, the self with the sense organs, the self with the physical body. So that you say, aham karta, I am a doer. I am the doer of these actions. So that's the delusion where the atma is actually taken to be the prakriti. The atma is identified in this language, as Krishna is putting it forward here. The atma is identified with what is actually just a modification of prakriti. Something which belongs to this creation. Because the body, mind, sense, organs, everything that makes you an individual, being prakriti is part of the total, right? And so the deluded one is the one whose I notion is identified with that. And because of that identification, that deluded person will say, aham karta, I am a doer. That's that, verse 27. He considers him to, he or she considers himself or herself to be a doer. Then he says, but in verse 28, but the tattvavit, the one who knows the truth of guna karma vibhaga yoho, of the differences, the difference of between of myself from the prakriti, all the modifications of the prakriti, and knows myself as different from the actions. I am not a karta. I am not a doer. I am not an enjoyer. There's no, for me, there is no karma pala. There's no karma, there's no bhoga. So we'll say in Vedanta, I am not the karta, comes from kriya. I'm not the karta, nominative singular. I'm not the doer. The atma is not a doer. The atma doesn't perform any action. Nor bhokta, nor am I the enjoyer. The atma awareness is not enjoying. In other words, the awareness isn't saying, oh, this is a happy thought, so now I'm happy. This is a sad thought, so now I'm happy. This is a bad experience, so now I've become depressed. The Atma isn't an enjoyer like this. The being, the me, the self, is never going through any modification whatsoever to become anything other than what you are. The being that you are now is the being that you've always been. The mind and the emotions are going through all kinds of modifications, but consciousness just illumines them like the sun illumines what's ever going on underneath. Whatever is going on in its sphere is being illumined by the sun, but the sun isn't being affected by what's being illumined. Like that, myself is constant. I'm not a karta, nor am I a bhokta. And so the tattvavit has discriminated my being from all actions and from all of the prakriti, the body, mind, sense organs. But it's clear, what belongs to the gunas belongs to the gunas. What belongs to the karma belongs to the karma. It's clear for that person. So for that person, gunaha guneshu vartante. The gunas move among the gunas. Right? Gunaha, the gunas, nominative plural. Guneshu, nominative, locative plural. Vartante is like asti. They belong, they remain. The gunas, all of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, all of the modifications, everything that belongs to the prakriti moves amidst the prakriti. So the gunas move amidst the gunas. And so knowing that, for the tattvavit, the one who knows the truth, knowing that, then nisajjate. That person is not attached. Right? For me, there's no attachment. Because if the gunas are moving among the gunas, right? And for myself, there is no... The gunas are, you could say the gunas are moving in me. I am their being. But I'm not becoming or changing by whatever modifications they go through. If that is my reality, there's no way that I can be attached to them because they go on producing all kinds of moods and emotions and activities while I remain the same. If I were attached, then as they went on changing, I would also be dragged along with that, right? If the mind becomes sorrowful, then I become sorrowful. If my body becomes athletic, I become athletic. If I'm walking, if the body is walking, I'm walking. If I'm throwing something, if the body is throwing something, I am throwing something. So I become attached or united, engaged with whatever activity is going on. That means sajjate. I'm attached to it. The tattvavit is not. Now, this is what's so beautiful about this. The tattvavit, the one who knows the truth, is not attached because the ahankara is resolved into the atma. You know, it's not like all of a sudden the body stops being engaged, being part of the prakriti, or that the mind starts being part of the prakriti. The gunas remain engaged in the gunas, right? So anything that belongs to the creation remains engaged and involved with the creation, because how is it going to step out of it? It's not. Right? And so when you say, I am not attached, it doesn't mean my mind is not attached. We'll see it from that level later. It's not that my mind is not attached. My mind is engaged in all of this. But the mind being engaged in all of this, that mind that is engaged in all of this recognizes myself, which is the self present to all of this engagement. See what I mean? The mind has an ahankara. The mind has an I notion. When we say ahankara, we usually are talking about ajnana, ignorance. Right? The ahankara means I'm identified with this body, mind, sense organs. But say about the jnani's ahankara, the jnani, the one that tattva a bit, will also say, you know, I'm going to the store, or I'm thinking, or my mind is agitated about this or that, or I'm agitated about this and that. But that's what we call a dugda bija. Dugda means burnt. Bija means seed. It's like a dugda bija. That thought has no reality to it. It's not like, it's just talking normally. Instead of saying, you know, my body is walking to the store and I don't move. By the way, you know. I just say I'm going to the store. You know? My mind is really, I'm really thinking this over. I've really been giving this a lot of thought. I've really been giving this a lot of thought. So I say that. I know that my mind is thinking. It's not that all of a sudden the Atma has started thinking. That's what we mean by dugda bija. It's just the use of language. You know? It's the use of language in an appropriate way. It doesn't make me become an ajnani. And so now, that being so, the aham vritti. So instead of aham kara now, I'm going to say the aham vritti. Well, now if I say aham for the jnani, who am I? What is the I thought? Where does it land? Where does the I, when you say I, where does it land? Does it land on your being, the Satchit Ananda, just the stable being of yourself? Or if you're an ajnani, it lands on, it's an ahankar. If it's knowledge, then the aham, your self-identification, is with yourself, Brahman. And that self is asanga. So this sajjate comes from, you know, sanj is the root, sanj. And sajjate means one is attached. No, sajjate is not attached because asanga, the atma is asanga. You're never changing or modifying in any way. And that is your experience. No matter what's going on in the mind, no matter what you're feeling, no matter what activities you're engaged in, you are the same. And your mind has got that. It recognized. If you've recognized it, you say, oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. You mean me, I, this being that I am, this me, that I have taken to be so engaged, taken to be the one that is totally one with the mind, one with the body, that this me actually never changes, and you recognize the truth of it. Because the truth of it, as in Panchadashi, is aparoksha. Once it's seen, it's aparoksha anyway. But once the mind recognizes it, then the mind has aparoksha jnanam of that self, which is self-evident. And that self-evident self, that me, never changes at all. And so that changeless self, which is the self of the mind, like the clay is the self of the pot, that self becomes the great home for the mind. And in a way, it's ridiculous. It's like saying, for the pot, the clay has become my home. The clay is my home now, you know? But what it means is it's recognized that its being, the stability of its truth, right? The truth of the mind, like the truth of the pot is the clay. The truth of the mind is you. But the thing is that that truth, which is you, the me, in fact, it never modifies. It's never covered. It's never changed in any way by the thoughts and feelings and moods, emotions and perceptions that come its way, the way of the mind. Yourself, which is its very content, its very being, its very I, the luminous, gives it its luminosity, that me is just abiding as the same in all ways, at all times. Therefore, asanga, na sajjate, it's never touched. That's what we mean. It's very simple. The idea is very simple here. It's not something to gain an experience of. It's a truth to be recognized. the truth to be recognized that this me that I am never changes. So for the tattva bit that has this viveka, has recognized, has differentiated the karma, the gunas, the modifications, the body, mind, sense organs, has differentiated all of that from my being. For that person, all of the gunas are moving among the gunas, and I am a sangha. I'm not attached to that. So that's the verse 28. Oh. Then now he says, but now, kakrite he guna, we're going back to the ones who are attached. He says, for the prakritehe guna sammudaha. Sammuda means deluded, very deluded, completely deluded. Because an ajnani is completely deluded. That's not an insult, it's a fact. You know, it's not like we're saying, oh, you deluded, you're completely deluded. Well, everybody's completely deluded. 100%, you know. Until you've recognized your own being. And the complete delusion is this. I am this body, mind, sensors. I am this person. This is who I am. So the Atma, yourself, the conscious being that you are, and this body have this anyonya adhyasa. So you are one. This is me, and you are you, and you are you, and you are you, and I am this. So that's the prakritehe gunasammudaha. The one who's completely deluded by the gunas, by the modifications, sattva, rajas, and tamas, modifications of the prakriti. Right? And that, what is it, if I'm completely deluded, what does that mean? I take myself to be there. Such are those people, sajjante, they are attached. These people who have this complete identification, they are attached to guna karmasu, to all of the activities of the gunas, all of the karmas that I do. What does it mean to, how would they be attached to all of the activities of the modifications? It means all of the activities, all of the karmas of the body, mind, sense organs. They're attached to it because as a karta bhokta, as myself being now, because I have this superimposition, this anyonya mutual superimposition, so I am this body, mind, sense organs, then of course I am very attached to the karmas, to all of the actions that I do. Why? Because, why do I do an action? I do an action for the karmapala. I do an action so that I can gain the result of the action. That's why I do things. Right? And why do I try to gain the result of an action? Why do I do karmas? Any karma? It's so I can be happy. That's why we do karma. We don't do karma to be miserable. The karma we do may make us miserable, but that's not why we did it. Right? We did it because we thought that if I do this, then I will get this result, and this result will make me happy. It even goes down so simple to go getting a drink of water. I'm thirsty, so I'm uncomfortable, so I want a drink of water, so that I can be comfortable, so that I can be at peace with myself. So this is the karta bhokta. That's all I know. I do the actions, I'm engaged in this world, doing actions, doing activities so that I can be happy. So he says, in Shankara, in his Bhasha, he just says, Vayam karma kurmaha palaya. Vayam means we, kurmaha, vayam kurmaha. We do karma, okay? Vayam kurmaha karma, we do karma. Why? Palaya. For the result. That's why we do karma. Even rituals. If we take just karma to mean rituals, why do you do a ritual? You don't just sit in the front of in fact, Shankara will joke this way. When you do a ritual, you are sitting in front of the fire, you know, and offering ghee and flowers and whatnot into the fire, maybe for 1 or 2 hours while all this chanting and things are going on. And by the time you're done, your eyes are burning with smoke. You are covered kind of with a sooty smell. Your eyes are burning with smoke, and half of the time you couldn't hardly talk because you've inhaled the smoke. So Shankara will describe all of this. You know, laughing. He said, now why would anybody do this? Right? For punya. You do it for punya, you know, just for punya so you can go to a heaven world, or you do it because you want a child, or you want wealth, or you want something to go your way. You do it for a particular result. That's why we do karma. That's in reference to rituals. But when you think of it, why do you do the actions that you do? You do them for the pala, for the result. And that is what an ajnani, one who's totally has no self, basically, everybody has a self, but it's not been differentiated. All of their actions are for the sake of gaining a result which they desire, so that in the attainment of that result, they will experience some happiness. And that happiness is all they have. They don't have differentiated, they have the experience of different levels of experience of happiness in the mind that is achieved through the fulfillment of a desire, or just spontaneously by some good luck. Like if you're taking a walk in nature, or a child smiles, it just makes you happy. It's like a gift, it's given to you. Otherwise, we're working for it through the attainment of a desire, so that we can have these blips, these experiences of happiness, and that's what we live our life for these experiences of happiness. Ajnani does not. Because the ananda of the self that illumines the mind, whether the mind is happy or sad, is by its own swarupa an ananda which is much more desirable. I would say like this. The ananda, there's nothing wrong with sukha except that it's modified by dukkha. You know. It's momentary, right? The sukha in the world is momentary, and it's radiated. Sukha a little more to the bliss states. And dukkha also is radiated. Sorrow, a little more sorrow, a little more sorrow, hell. And so heaven, hell, there's a range. But now, even if you go through the whole range from dukkha to sukha, those are modifications of the mind, of the sattva. Those experiences, even the greatest joy, is an experience that belongs to the mind. You can say the self reflects in the quiet mind, or however you want to say it. But that is an experience, that joy is an experience of sattva. So say you have, you fulfilled a desire, and you have a mind which has become just pure sattva, just so quiet. It's become so quiet, so peaceful, that you experience great joy in that mind, like a bliss state. You know? Would you rather have the bliss state or the ananda of yourself? Now, there's two ways to look at this. You could say, well, I'd rather have the ananda of myself, because the ananda of myself, once recognized, what you recognize is that it's constant. It's present in the bliss state. It's present in the unhappy state. It doesn't make any difference. It's its own shine. It's asanga. The ananda, which is my being, has nothing to do. It's not hidden by or changed in any way by whatever modification of mind is there, whether it be happy or sad. So would you rather have the constancy of your ananda, I could say, the ananda, which is yourself, would you rather recognize that? Or would you rather work to have these bliss states, which is more desirable to you? You can have both if you want, it doesn't matter. But just if you were to compare the two, you know, you could say, well, this one lasts longer, so I'll take this one. No, I don't mean that. I mean in terms of, that's true. I don't mean that. I mean in terms of wholeness, fullness, satisfaction, peace, joy. Not peace, no, I won't use that word. In terms of desirability. In terms of your desirability, which is it? You know? And so I would say that the nature of your being, there's no contest between the nature of me, the ananda, which is the nature of me, which is present right now, not something I'm not talking about having to do some pranayama in order to get into another state. Who you are, this very me, is really incomparable, incomparably more desirable than even the highest bliss state of the mind. So put it like this. What if you had the most ecstatic bliss state of the mind and you said that was permanent? That's a permanent bliss state. Mm. Versus your own being. And I would say that your own being is by far more desirable. That's why in the Taittiriya Upanishad, one of the ways of looking at that Taittiriya Upanishad, they go through all of the different bliss states a human being could enjoy. Then if you go to Gandharva Loka, how it's the most pleasure a person could enjoy, the most ananda that person could enjoy in Gandharva Loka, and then on another loka, and then on another loka, and then in Swarga Loka. What of all of these lokas, the highest bliss state compared to the one who has Atmajnanam? And there is no comparison. It's not, they're apples and oranges, actually. That's a really wonderful thing to contemplate on. They're apples and oranges. Those bliss states, more bliss, more longer lasting bliss, deeper, more profound bliss, longer lasting, more profound. Would you rather have any one of those up to Swargaloka, up to Brahmaji, or the ananda that the jnani enjoys? You have to say the ananda that the jnani enjoys, because the ananda that the jnani enjoys is me, and there is nothing more dear to me than myself. That's something to realize. There's nothing more dear to me than myself. You know, would I rather have myself, or you could say like this, would I rather have myself or the bliss state? Well, obviously, I would rather be there. Why? Because I love myself. Why do you love yourself? What is it about this me that is so desirable? It's a beautiful meditation, because there is nothing more desirable than this very simple, obvious presence of my own being, just this me that is here right now. And so here, what he says is, for the sammuddha, for the person who's deluded, you know, all that person really has are working for these bliss states that are temporary, right? But that's what a person does. They're working for dharma, and the whole first portion of the Vedas, the whole first part of the Vedas, the Karmakanda, is really designed to teach dharma. Why? So that I can enjoy, my mind can enjoy the maximum amount of peace that this world has to offer by behaving properly in the world, by doing karmas properly. You know, the first part of the Vedas teaches you how to do that. And so for the one who's totally identified with this, that shouldn't be disturbed. Mm-hmm. You know? Don't disturb the person. Don't tell that person, because now you're a great jnani, don't tell that person who has that total identification, who really takes the ananda to be something achieved in the world, don't say, don't do karmas. Why are you sitting in front of the fire, you know, getting all smoky? Why are you saying prayers? Why are you doing this or that? Why bother? Yourself is free. You don't need to do any of that. Don't do that. He says, tan akritsna viddha mandan. He says, for the akritsnavids. Kritsna means somebody who is whole, knows the whole. Akritsnavid means one who doesn't know what the whole thing. So it's an interesting use of the term, the one who doesn't know the whole. What is to know the whole, really, is that I am Ishwara. That's knowing that. If you say, I am Ishwara, what does that mean? I am Ishwara means I am the whole. That the me, this changeless asanga me, this changeless me is the self of the creation. So when you say, I am the whole, you can say, I am the whole, or I am Ishwara. That's this knowledge. It's not just that I am a Sangha Atma. It's that this Asanga Atma is the very being, the very self of the entire creation. So that's the Kritsnavit. That's the one who knows the whole thing, has this knowledge completely. So, but then, that person who is a Kritsnavit, na vichaliyate, don't shake up and confuse, don't cause confusion. You know, don't cause confusion for those people who are akritsnavits, who don't know. They don't have self-knowledge. They're not seekers, they're not mumukshus. They're individuals in the world. There's samsaris in the world who are trying to make their way. So don't take away dharma from them. Don't take away the shastra from them. Don't take away the things, the understandings that will give them the antakarna shuddhi that they need, right? The relative antakarna shuddhi that they need to have a meaningful and peaceful life. Or the antakarna shuddhi, the means for antakarna shuddhi that will lead eventually to mumukshutvam. But if not, but down the road, may let it lead to mumukshutvam. Now let the dharma, understanding of dharma and proper behavior and the shastra give them a life that gives them depth and meaning. Don't confuse them by taking that away. So, tan akritsnavit mandan. Mandan usually means those who are dull. By dull, though, all they mean here is aviveka. Those who have no viveka, they're not clear. So, we wouldn't use the word dull. We would say they don't have clarity. Don't have clarity means what? They don't have viveka. They don't have discrimination, the ability to discriminate their own being, you know, to release their own being, to recognize who they are, and what is the prakriti, what is the karma, what is this, to be able to say, I am the whole. So if they don't have that, then don't take that. They're sammudaha, right? They're deluded in terms of the goodness of the prakriti. They take themselves to be that. Let them be. Let them live a dharmic life. Don't cause any confusion there. Then he says, Mayi sarvani karmani, Mayi sarvani karmani, Sanyasya dhyatma chetasa, Sanyasya dhyatma chetasa, Nirashiru nirmamo bhutva, Nirashiru nirmamo bhutva yudhyasva vigata chvaraha yudhyasva vigata chvaraha mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya adhyatma chetasa nirashihi nirmamaha bhutva yudhyasva Vigata jwaraha. Jwaraha. Vigata jwaraha. He says, now, by mumukshu, right now he's addressing directly Arjuna. In the introduction he says, katam punaha. The Shankara introduces the verse. He says, "Katam punahana." Tell me again. You know, for a mumukshu, by a mumukshu who's qualified to do karma, so a mumukshu who's really qualified for karma yoga, not for taking sannyasa, right? They're best suited, like Arjuna, just to do karma yoga. So for that person, how should the karma be done then, right? For the person who's seeking this knowledge is a mumukshu, mm-hmm. and Krishna has said to Arjuna, you know, you do your karma, as we'll see in this verse, you do the karma, do here what is to be done. Then, if I'm going to do this karma because I'm a mumukshu, I'm seeking knowledge, how should I do it? How should the karma be done? How should I hold it? How should I hold the karma? So Krishna says, Mayi, in me, Sarvani karmani, all of the karmas, accusative plural. Mayi in me, sarvani karmani, sanyasya. Having renounced, having given up all of the karmas, having given all of the karmas to me, having renounced all of the karmas in me, right? Having turned them all over to me, renouncing all of the karmas in me. Adhyatma chetasa, with a mind that is, adhyatma chetasa means with a mind that has viveka. Adhyatma means centered on me, centered on the self. But here in the Bhasha and in Swamiji's Bhasha, they take it like this. With a mind that is self-possessed, self-contained, right? Means it has viveka. It knows what is dharma and adharma. It understands karma yoga. So what is that mind going to be understand? It's going to have a karma yoga buddhi with viveka. Means because a mumukshu, and this is again throughout the Gita, if this isn't understood, Swamiji said so many times, if this isn't understood, the Gita's not understood. Otherwise, the Gita becomes very confusing.
Mm-hmm. So what's that now?
What I'm going to tell you. There's two lifestyles, karma yoga and sannyasa. Sannyasa means taking your orange. Karma yoga means living in the world and doing your duties that are before you to be done. As opposed to taking sannyasa, which is really taking vows where you're renouncing all of those duties and you're going to just live with a teacher, to live an aesthetic life where all you do is study and contemplate and then later teach. But for both people are mumukshus here. The one who's living the karma yoga life, the one who's taking sannyasa, both are mumukshus, right? Not jnanis. Both will become jnanis. So we're talking about ones who have knowledge. So we're talking about ones who are seeking. So now for one who is seeking, Krishna, Arjuna kept saying, well, which is the best? Which would be the best for me? Because you know I want knowledge. You know I want to get knowledge. He says all throughout the Gita, karma yoga is the best. Because if you follow the karma yoga lifestyle, you stay in your element. You're in your element. And then all of the challenges, all of the duties that are there become your field for gaining the antakarna shuddhi. If you try to escape, you know, to kind of run away from your life, thinking that you can run away from your attachments and whatnot, it never works. Because you're taking the mind with you. The same attachments that you have here, those particular people, those particular situations won't be here. And now you've gone to an ashram. But you'll recreate them. Because in the ashram, or up in the Himalayas, there will still be people, there will still be activities that you have to do. So all of the problems that you have here, you'll have there, but you won't have the same freedom to rub against them. It's easier to gain the antakarana shuddhi within your own sphere all the while studying than it is to prematurely renounce all of that and just run off to an ashram and stay there having given up all of... See, the thing is, if you take sannyasa, you give up your rights to be a samsari. You can't go get a job. You can't go make money. You can't date again and have a relationship. You can't own things. You can't start a business. You've renounced all of that. And so the whole field of experience that's available to a person, you've turned your back on through vows that are taken very seriously in India. Now what is left to you is to live just without a means of employment, just by the grace of God, and spend all of your time studying. And there was room for that in India also, you know, where the people would also support the sadhus, the sannyasis. They would support them. You would go and beg for food, but they don't look at you as a beggar. They're happy to give you the food like that. There was room for all of that. But what it did, you totally removed yourself from the ability to work through any desires or things that you might have. And now all that's open to you is to live a meditative, contemplative life and study. And so Krishna has always said, you know, you take care of the antikarana shuddhi through karma yoga. Even if you were to take sannyasa and you didn't have the antikarana shuddhi, you would have to be practicing karma yoga. When the karma yoga does its job and the antikarana shuddhi is there, and so you have the nishta, right, from the knowledge, because the antikarana shuddhi is there, so there's, you don't have the obstructions and things in the antikarana that you're having to work through. That's all taken care of. Then take sannyasa or don't. Even then, some people didn't take, who are jnanas, who are jivanmuktas, like Janaka, remember in a previous verse, who were great kings. Their prarabdha was such that they had to stay and rule the kingdom. It doesn't make any difference. Or if it's your prarabdha and it suits you to take sannyasa, then take sannyasa, because you're well suited for it. There's no conflict at all. And so this karma yoga, look at the karma yoga and the sannyasa as lifestyles. And then, for the jnani, we gain sarva karma sannyasa. Right? That's for jivan mukta. Sarva karma sannyasa means renunciation of all karmas. There's only one way to renounce all karmas. And that is the recognition that aham akarta. I am not a karta. I am not a doer. I am not a bhokta. I never have done any action. I never will do any action. That's a jnani. Whether a karma yogi or a sannyasi, both are going to end up there with that knowledge, which is the renunciation of all action because of the nature of myself. Here, he says, mayi sarvani karmani sannyasya, renouncing all actions to me. And this is karma yoga. That means I understand all of this as a karma yogi. I understand this whole creation is Ishwara. And I take all of the actions that I do as the duties that are here before me to be done, and I accept the results of those actions as prasad from the Lord. And with that attitude, I'm not running out, you know, after this fancy or that fancy so that I can be happy. Right? What are fancies? Oh, I want to do this so I can be happy. I'm not running around seeking happiness. I'm doing the duties that are here available, and there are many, the duties that are here available to be done, and I do that accepting the results as prasad from the Lord. And that is my sphere of activity. A little pleasures, you know, what if we say, like bike riding or watching TV or all of the things that we do. These are just the little pleasures of life. These are not fancies or anything like that. The fancies are, you know, let me do this or let me do that so that I can be happy, and let me create this and let me create that, where my mind gets lost in that, you know, so that now I can become a great this or that. My mind doesn't engage in those fantasies. That's a discipline and for a karma yogi. Let me do and engage in the life that is here, this life that is here now. Let me fully engage in this life and do it to the best of my ability and accept the results as prasad from the Lord. So that's the sannyasa. That's the renouncing or giving all of these activities unto me. Krishna says, give them all to me. All of these activities that are, these, recognize these as all being given to you from me. So Krishna could say, these are all me. All of these. All of the karmas are me, all of the activities, the situation is me. So engage in the situation and receive the results of the action as prasad from me. Now, he says, so with a mind, adhyatma chetasa, which a mind, with a mind that understands that, that has that viveka, the viveka based upon this teaching that you've been taught. Okay. Then he says, nirashihi, be one. Now, so now he's saying, and how to be when in that? Nirashihi. Don't, ashi means like hope. So you, but you don't want to say be without hope. There's no hope. It's not that. That's not what's meant. hope is this looking to the future, well, expectancy, you know? It's like, I'm doing this so that this will happen. Or I'm doing this with the hopes of gaining this result. It's not that we do things to gain results, but when I'm hoping to get from point A to B, and that's where my drishti is, that's where my vision is, don't do like that.
Mm-hmm.
You do the jobs that are before you in the best way that you can, to the best of your ability. It's not, the focus is not on, out there. The focus is here. It's not that you don't know what you're doing or why you're doing it, but where is your drishti? Where is your focus? Keep your focus and your commitment here to doing the best job that you can, and then accept the results from Ishwara, if that makes sense. And the next one is Nirmama. Nirmama without a big ahankara. Nirmama means mine. Nirmama, it is not mine. Right? None of this is mine. All of this is Ishwara. This is Swamiji, sometimes he'll spend almost 20 minutes on this one. Is this body mine? Is this body mine? Who gave you? He'll go on like this. Did you make this body yourself? Who gave you the body? Your parents gave you the body. Okay. What about your partner? Does your partner own some of this body or have any rights on this body? Go on and on and on. Yeah. What is actually yours? Yeah. What is actually yours?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, everything that you are and everything that you have is actually part of a shared reality. It's very Buddhist in that way. I wouldn't say Buddhists put a lot of emphasis on this. So do Vedanta, and so do most of all of the schools in the East actually really talk about this. So that everything is completely interrelated. You know, there's nothing that just belongs to one person. Everything is shared and interrelated. So start seeing that interrelationship. Nothing is just yours. Everything is shared and interrelated with so many other things and comes from so many other things and is needed and depended upon by so many other things. There's nothing that just stands alone. So that's that Niramama. So having become that way, recognizing all of this, that Nirashihi, not projecting your hopes into the future, but staying in the present. Another thing, this maybe a good way to see it is say it is projecting your hopes into the future. A lot of times if you just notice, are you living now in the present? Or are you projecting into the future or regretting the past? Regretting or thinking about the past or projecting into the future? Or are you engaged here and now? So in this karma yoga buddhi, it's that discipline really of bringing the mind back and letting it learn how to be engaged in the life that you've been given so that you can live it. Otherwise, the life is lived, but you haven't been here. It's true. So the whole life, or even right now, the life is living, but are you here, or are you projected into the future, or worried about what has come before? And most people, and I remember at one time when I think Swamiji was talking about this, thinking, realizing in myself, I don't spend very much time here. I wouldn't say that's true now, but it was true. And I remember being kind of horrified.
Mm-hmm.
And I would keep noticing it, that in fact I was much more worried about the future or thinking about the past than actually living. And that's what it amounts to, actually living and being present here to your life. You miss the whole thing. So he has actually spent a lot of classes talking about that you actually miss the whole thing, you know, while your body is living. it's a weird, but it's, but it's very true. It's so true. So he says, you know, be here now and live and be engaged in the life that's before you. And so without, what does he say? So after he said all of this, Vigatas Jwaraha, he says, give up this, Jwara means fever. Like if you're really sick with a fever, this Jwara. And Vigata, let the fever go. Mm-hmm. So Jwara is a word that's used for shoka, for sorrow. You know, when you're unhappy, you can feel the kind of the burning or the unhappiness, you know, or the misery that you have, the shoka. So Vigata Jwaraha, give up the fever, let that fever, that sorrow, give all of that up. And then what does he say? Yudhyasva, get up and fight. May you fight, go fight. Because remember, Arjuna is there in the middle of the battlefield and he tells to Krishna, no, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to. He drops his arrow, gets bow and arrow, and he just plops himself down in the chariot and asks Krishna to please teach me. Please teach me. Yeah. And then Krishna taught him all this whole thing. And now he gets to this point and he's teaching him now karma yoga. And what he's not really giving him an order now, go fight, even though he is. He's saying, understanding this, what I've unfolded to you, understanding this, with this understanding, you go and fight. Why should you go and fight? Because, as we'll see in the next verses, we'll do this next week. Why should you go and fight? Because that is your dharma. Other people have other dharmas. This person has this dharma, this person has this dharma. You were born as a kshatriya. This is the situation you find yourself in. This is your duty. It's better to die doing your duty. And even it's better, as you'll see in the next verses, it's better to do your own dharma, even improperly, than to take on somebody else's dharma. If you take on somebody else's dharma, trying to live somebody else's life, that life will be filled with great fear because there's no stability in it. It's not your life. Your life is given to you. This life that you have is yours. And the whole creation conspires to make room for you in your life. But if you try to make your life become somebody else's life, then you have no place. Nothing works. In fact, all the universe will do is keep trying to push you back into your own life. But he says it's better to do your own dharma, even your own dharma, even improperly, than to do somebody else's dharma. Even to die doing your own dharma is much better than having a life fraught with fear doing somebody else's dharma. Right? So he's trying to now make Arjuna engage in his life with this knowledge. Engage in this life with a proper attitude, with a proper attitude that helps the mind gain the antakarna shuddhi, right? That is necessary to hold the attitudes that are necessary to really hold this knowledge that Krishna is giving him. Right? So Krishna is giving Arjuna self-knowledge and also giving him the attitudes that are necessary for this self-knowledge to take root. Right? The self-knowledge that a person gets itself I'm going to put it this way. Those attitudes that Krishna is giving to Arjuna, the karma yoga, all of that, those attitudes are natural to one who has knowledge. That's just a natural way of being for one who has knowledge. But then for one who doesn't have knowledge, the mind is working in a way that is the antithesis, in a sense, of the way a mind works when one has knowledge. And so by understanding, by gaining this karma yoga buddhi, the mind now is coming into a certain way of being with the creation, recognizing the creation of Ishvara as Ishvara, and accepting the results as prasad, That gives the mind a karma yoga buddhi, which is, there's not much difference between the karma yoga buddhi and the way and the mind of a jnani. And so it creates that antakarana shuddhi, which allows this knowledge to take root and then become, then for, allows one to just recognize fully, you know, that the akarita, I'm not a doer, I'm not a bhokta, I'm Ishwara. That's where it resolves. But that karma yoga buddhi thins out the kartritvam and the bhoktritvam, the doership and the enjoyership. It really thins it out. So what it does is not creating all of the dukkha, the sukha, the ups and downs at all. So it's as though resolving it before it's resolved. And then knowledge resolves it all the way. Mm. That makes sense.
Mm. Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Let's stop there. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.